Tracking, mixing, editing, audio restoration, transfers, wire recording,
tape transfers,
instantaneous records, enhancement,
on hold messaging,
commercial and long form voiceovers,
podcasting,
audiobooks, location recording. We're Avocado Productions. Hello and welcome to Avocado Productions webcast number 3, where we continue our conversation about wire recordings. In past programs, I have played you snippets of recordings we've transferred from wire that I've found interesting. On this program, I'm going to play edited portions of a wire recording that has been incredibly intriguing for me. This wire came to us for transfer several years ago as part of a series of audio letters to and from a Marine and his wife. During World War II, he had been a POW imprisoned at the Hirohata prison camp in Japan. It is now around 1951 or so, and he's now a sergeant stationed in Japan. He has a 3-day pass, and originally plans to go to Tokyo to visit friends of his wife. But because of the weather, he decides to do something else. And so begins his remarkable story.
I didn't know how the weather was going to be here. It was still raining in Osaka, and the people, it was raining all over the islands here. So I said, well, heck it. I'll just take a trip out to Himeji here, which is, you know, the largest town by Hirohata, you know, where I was a PW, and just curious to see what the place looked like. So I got off the train at Himeji, and I went over and caught a cab, and it seemed like there were people aren't used to having GIs, you know, Americans in Meiji there. And, well, I later learned that there was, I believe, 5 GIs, officers and enlisted men, in Himeji is all. But I went over and caught this cab and told them where I wanted to go. So I rode out to the steel mill. That I ended up at the main gate at the steel mill there about, I don't know, I guess about 11 o'clock or so that I got there. And so I paid the cab driver, and I think it cost me 400 yen to ride from Meiji out there. It probably took us a half hour, 45 minutes. A lot of bouncing around the deal. But he was kind of leery to leave me there or not. He told me I couldn't get in. I told him, yeah, I thought so. So anyway, he went up to the gate with me and had about 8 or 10 of these Japanese guards. And boy, they stopped me, but they were bound determined I wasn't going through, so none of them spoke English, so I was jabbering at them there in Japanese, and I finally got them to understand that, you know, I was a PW there at this Hirohata camp, and I worked in the steel mill. So they asked me who I worked for, and I told them Seikan, which was this more or less company within the Seitetsu Steel Corporation. And they asked me what branch, and I told them this Kosako. And but anyway, back jabbering forth that they was talking, and they... Anyway, they called up Seikan. They asked me who I wanted to talk to, and I told them I wanted to talk to Hidata, that he was more of a shop foreman there. And they finally got a hold of him. They called him to the phone. So he asked who it was, and they asked me my name, and so I told him to say Andy. And they say Andy, it's Andy, and then he said that. You could hear him on the phone, ah, so, you know, I see, and then Chotamati, you know. And he'd be right out the gate. And it didn't take him about 2 minutes to get out there. He came out on a bicycle. And he was all smiles. We had quite a conversation there. That he knows just a few words of English, but we jabbered back and forth anyway. He'd talk in Japanese, and I'd talk in English, and that we had a big time. And then they took me out in the plant, and they called all the fellows together. And I, well, heck, I must have known that about half the fellows there in the shop, you know, that were still there from work there during the war. And I spent, well, I must have spent an hour and a half out in the shop there just jabbering with these guys and this, that, and the other thing, that having, you know, renewing old acquaintance in general. So then they asked me if I'd, you know, asked me what I wanted to do, and I told them, well, I wanted to take a trip over and see this old camp of ours. So this fellow was a big wheel there at Kasaki. He said, well, sure, he'd get a company car and we'd drive over there. So we drove over to where the camp was and stopped, and it still had the fence around it. And they had one of the big buildings left, I mean, the barracks we stayed in. I walked inside the gate, and there's a bunch of Japanese in there, and we started talking to them. And they were remodeling it. They were going to make a more or less a housing project out of it. It was Japanese housing. And I told them that, you know, I was a PW there and I wanted to look the place over. So they went on back and unbarred the back barracks there. And the place is still just about the same inside. They still had the beige and everything is untouched. But the one big barracks that I stayed in had burnt down. But our old kitchen was still there, and that where our hospital was, and the Japanese offices, and the guardhouse, and so on and so forth, you know, it was still there. But anyway, after we had fooled around this camp for a while, he asked me if I'd like to go up and see where these fellows were buried. And I told him yes, that I would. So we went on up where this little cemetery was. It's about a quarter of a mile from, went up the road from the camp. And they had this big sign out there saying that one of the bodies of the 15 Americans were interned in this prison camp had been removed in, I believe, 1947, it said. And so we went on back where they built this monument. It was a tall brick monument. It must have been, 25 feet tall, and it's probably, 3 feet square at the base, and goes on up more or less to a point at the top. And another sign back there saying the same thing, that the monument was for the 15 Americans who had perished in this prison camp.
The recording continues for a total of about 45 minutes or so, where he describes how, after leaving the prison camp, they take him into town, get him a hotel room, have dinner with him, bring in entertainment, have breakfast with him the next day, and make sure he gets on the right train back. And they pay for it all. Here's what he had to say at the end of his story.
But all in all, honey, that 3 days I spent, I really, really enjoyed myself. I mean, that's the best time I've had in Japan. And those people there at the steel mill, I mean, that they really treated me 100%. That I don't know how I'd have acted if, you know, the situation was reversed. But I know one thing, I don't believe I'd showed anybody as nice a time as they'd showed me. And like the company paid the hotel bill and my meals and so on and so forth, and that while I was in Himeji there, that I didn't spend a penny hardly. About the only money I spent was my transportation both ways and my taxi fare out to the steel mill the first time. And it does a person good that, to go back there and be treated like that. It doesn't leave such a bad taste in a person's mouth as it did the last time. And I know that I wish to heck I could do something to repay those fellows, you know, for the favor they showed me when I was up there, but I don't know what the heck it would be. We'll see what turns up anyway.
Now, this is an exceptional recording, but I think it really illustrates the importance of having any old recordings you may find, be it tape, record, wire, or some other strange format, transferred and preserved for generations to come. You just don't know what treasures are waiting to be uncovered. Well, although these first few programs have focused on wire recordings, we do have future webcasts planned on other forms of old media and also the history of recording in general, particularly in popular music. We welcome your program ideas, and you can email them along with any questions or comments you might have to this address, info@avocadoproductions.com. I'm Angie Dickinson-Mickle. I hope you enjoyed this program. Thanks for listening.